All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com.
Welcome to episode 301 of the DFO Rundown, brought to you by Bet365, our sports betting partner, right now through the 2024 playoffs and all the rest of the year. And we'll be here with the Bet365 crew to provide you all the news, analysis, lines, and betting options for the playoffs until one team is left. We are down to eight. We'll see who's the last one standing. I'm Jason Greger alongside Frank Saravalli. And at least numbers wise, we are halfway through from 16 to 8. Obviously, we're only 25% through the rounds as round two began yesterday. Frank, we're going to recap round one, talk a little bit about Vegas and Toronto near the end of the pod. But I guess we can start with what we know, which is round two. It started yesterday as the Rangers in Carolina. And pretty much what has been the recipe for success all season long for the Rangers. Their special teams are dominant. They were in the regular season. They were again in round one. And they were again in game one. And that was really the difference as they beat Carolina 4-3.
So our friend Paul Paduti, who does an unbelievable job with his content at dailyfaceoff.com, he's always providing some extra context. And in this case, he pointed out this morning that, I'll just read his tweet for you. He says, for all the first round hot takes, blame games, tactical questioning, puck luck, play scrutinizing, and calls to blow up organizations, all eight matchups in the first round were decided by special teams. The teams that won the percentage battle in their series went 8-for-8. That's a staggering stat.
Yeah. Yes and no, really, when you think about how close it is, right? I think like the Rangers, obviously they dominate. They probably could have won that whole series 5-on-5 for sure. But like LA and Edmonton, it was definitely a major factor. No question. Like probably
they had the biggest disparity.
Yeah.
The Oilers power play and penalty kill was a combined 145%, which means that the Kings was 55%.
Yeah.
But the Bruins and Leafs had the next biggest one, and that went down to overtime of game seven, which I think further highlights the absolute issues that the Leafs had. But that's we'll tackle that later. But I think we always hear the term power play merchants, and you know, that team's not really that good, but their power play is awesome. And it's like, well, you've said this time and time again, the history and stats back it up. If you can't win the Stanley Cup without a good power play, and you definitely can't win the Stanley Cup without a good penalty kill.
No, I think we should point out the people that talked about power play merchants were ones trying to defend Austin Matthews by why he was in the same category as McDavid and Draisaitl, because he can't score in the power play, but he's great 5-on-5. Like, shh, that's what I would say to those people. Shh, you're exposing yourself.
Yeah, you're telling yourself.
Yeah. As teams go, it is one, you know, and so now if you have the top eight, essentially, and really you have eight of the top nine teams in points moving on to the second round. The only team that's not in there is Winnipeg, and they had 110, and Colorado, who beat them, had 107. Like, there really wasn't any major upsets. Like, Colorado, was that a major upset? I don't think so. Nope. So we didn't really have any upsets in the first round for the most part. And now we'll get to the second round. I'm curious when we break it down, right? Like, there's lots of ones and twos. There's obviously the 1-1 versus 3 in Dallas and Colorado. And, you know, we'll see, you know, how it comes out. The what I found interesting was certain teams who struggle on the man advantage have guys who shouldn't, right? Like, they should be able to be a little bit better on the man advantage, and they weren't. Like, Toronto's power play was really good to start the season, but then in the second half and all through the playoffs.
It was good for 1 month this season, and that's
it. It was awful.
Yeah. It was good for 1 month. That's it.
Yeah.
The rest of the time, it was pretty lackluster and definitely was not good heading into the playoffs. Yeah. But Rangers, Canes, that kind of surprises me when I think of both those teams and how game one played out, the significant special teams advantage. First off, what game one told us is that that's going to be a fantastic series. Canes scored late and had a chance to tie it in the last minute and a half. The Rangers were able to jump out to that early lead by virtue of the special teams advantage that they had. And I just think there's next to nothing separating these teams. I think this series is a true coin flip in every sense of the word. I look at the betting odds on Bet365 and the models, and they suggested before the series started that Carolina had about a 60% implied probability to win.
Yeah.
It sounds high to me. And I wonder if at any point will the old Freddie Anderson show up? will they make the old Freddie Anderson show up, the Rangers?
Potentially. Now, if we're going deep on the Freddie Anderson, are you suggesting he might get injured? Because that's really what's always been kind of the downfall of Freddie Anderson, is I think he gets injured and then he's playing with a nagging injury, and a lot of times that impacts his play. So I really hope not, because I'd like to see him stay healthy through a whole series and kind of see what he showcases. But, you know, for both of these teams, I don't know if there was an easier first round for two teams than it was for the Rangers and the Canes. And now we'll kind of see. I think they almost... they're going to have to ratchet it up a little bit against one another in the second round. And what's funny is Carolina's penalty kill, Frank, which was very good all season. I think they had the second best penalty kill in the regular season. It wasn't actually very good. It was only in the first round. It wasn't good at all, really. So they, what were they, like 72 or 73%, I think it was. Mm-hmm. So against an Islanders team, by the way, who's not a juggernaut on the power play. And now you face the Rangers. But both of these teams were great on both special teams. So you're right. The one thing that does separate them is, you know, the Rangers 5-on-5 overall wasn't that great in the regular season. But guess what? If you are able to continue what you do well in the regular season into the playoffs, I don't care if they're not great on 5-on-5, if they continue to dominate on special teams. And I think they're going to have to, and that's going to be hard to do, though, against a team that historically is really good on the penalty kill. Like, year in, year out, like, Carolina is kind of like the Edmonton of the penalty kill. The Edmonton's power play has been great for 5 years. The Hurricanes' penalty kill has been really good.
Which is why I said it was super surprising that the Rangers started the series 2-for-2 on the power play.
Yeah.
So on Daily Faceoff, we had to submit our picks before the series started. Who did you pick and why?
I took the Hurricanes in six because of their improved regular season 5-on-5 play. I thought it was better. Their special teams was pretty much a wash. I agree that Shesterkin, if they're both on and both healthy, I would still give an advantage there to the Rangers. But I thought the Hurricanes relentless pressure 5-on-5, and I think they'll be better than they were in game one and game two. And I think this could, like, after game one, I'm like, geez, now they got to win 4 or 5. But hey, we just saw Dallas do that against Vegas, so it's definitely possible. But I like Carolina, might go 7, but I thought the Canes overall top to bottom are slightly deeper.
I also went with the Canes in 7. I think adding that difference maker in Jake Guentzel to me would be the difference. He was pretty good in game one, had some really good looks. I really like this Ranger team though, and I wouldn't be surprised to see I wouldn't be surprised to see the Rangers win the series at all. I think this is as close a razor thin margin as you can get. And think about how the regular season played out. The Rangers, President's Trophy winner, home team. The Canes went 12-3-1 down the stretch and didn't catch them. Like, that's how good the Rangers were. Just, it was almost like a Kentucky Derby finish. That close by a nose all season long that the Rangers just maintained a lead, which I think says something about their consistency. I think their neutral zone play was so vastly improved this year under Peter Laviolette. Shesterkin found himself again. There's lots of reasons to point to the Rangers, but I agree with you. I think the Canes as constituted right now are just a bit deeper.
Yeah. But I will say the Metro and the Central were the two that were the hardest for me that I really, you know, looked into a lot of numbers over who I thought would win. The other two, I kind of, you know, I thought would be shorter series. We'll see. But two teams I thought were a little easier to pick. But, you know, I'm looking forward to this series, Carolina and the Rangers. I think it's going to be back and forth. And I think it'll be a little bit more spicy as the series goes along. No question.
Game one was pretty spicy, to be honest.
Oh, you know what? I'll say Matt Rempe has really, I think it's the old adage that when you have a big guy like that, it makes the rest of your team bigger. And I think in today's game, it does even more because there's just not many tough guys around in the NHL. And Rempe can skate well enough. He's physical. We see him, you know, he's a young guy who seems to still get some reputation penalties where I think if lots of other people deliver those hits, they wouldn't be penalties. But he seems to have gotten that Ranger team a lot more fired up, Frank. Like they go into every scrum as a pack of hyenas and everybody's walking in there a little bit tougher. And I think that's a good thing.
I agree. Well, off the top of your head, where did you have Jordan Staal on your Selkie ballot, if anywhere?
I think I had him 3rd or 4th only because of his goal four differential. That was the one I dropped him down a bit because of that. I know expected goals was better and everything, but at the end of the day, goals are the one that ultimately impact the game the most. And it's hard for me to give a Selke number one vote to somebody who has a negative goal four differential. At 5-on-5.
I'm with you. I had him 3rd. It really is funny how of all the awards that have been announced to this point, and there will be a few more to close out this week, including the biggest ones like the Hart Trophy, but I had more belly aching in my social media feed about the Selke than any award so far over the last week. They're like, Staal has he was a minus 14 this year. What do you mean? How could that guy possibly win the Selke? And it's like, okay, where do we start here? And then the next thing was, but Austin Matthews, look at this guy, doesn't kill penalties. How is this guy someone that can win the Selke? It's like, all right, are you watching?
Yeah, well, I will say I do have it. I do agree with that.
So where did you have Matthews?
I'd have to go back and look at my ballot. I think him and Staal were 3rd, 4th, I think, for me.
Okay. I had Matthews too. Okay. And I do understand the opinion. I'm just saying it's odd that for an award that most people don't get jacked up about, it seems like that really riles up both sides of the debate, whether you're a numbers person or not.
Oh yeah. No, hey, if people aren't complaining about it, it's, you know what, you're always going to, if everybody agreed, it'd be pretty boring, right? Mm-hmm. I would say this to be, hey, you're entitled for a different opinion, right? Back it up with why you think something is. Then we'll have a discussion. If you just want to be like, hey, you're an idiot, hey, whatever, like, it's a waste of my time. So I still think Barkov's going to win, and I don't think it's going to be close.
I would agree.
Right. So people can bellyache over who's second, third, fourth, and fifth. At the end of the day, to me, is did they get the right person to win? That's what matters. Opinions are going to vary from 2 to 5 or 7 or whatever. Great. And that's awesome discussion. But
just like I think that Chris Knobloch was robbed in not being a finalist for the Jack Adams, at the end of the day, it's not really going to matter because Rick Tockett's winning that award and everyone knows it.
Yeah, I will say this. Like people said, well, you know, the orders are supposed to be good. So I'm always kind of like, well, why does the coach of the year always have to be a coach who people thought wasn't going to be good? Well, first of all, if you didn't think Vancouver is going to be good, I don't think you're paying attention to the last 30 games. That's why I picked Vancouver to make the playoffs. Rick Tocchet had the Canucks a top five team the last 30 games.
Yeah, but no one had them challenging or winning the division and challenging for the President's Trophy in the last week of the season.
No, sure.
No one had that. And I would consider myself an early adopter of the Canucks.
Right? Like, I just didn't have them as a non-playoff team is my point.
Right.
Like, I didn't think they were going to be like this 70-point team that came out of nowhere and had 100 and whatever in 9 points.
Yeah, and I guess to your point, why is it that, you know, Chris Knobloch takes over that team as 29th in the league?
30th.
And if they would have had the same success this year with Jay Woodcroft, I mean, I could see someone making that argument that they ultimately would have gotten to the same place. But why doesn't Paul Maurice get credit for a 10-win improvement this year? Why doesn't Peter Laviolette get credit for winning the President's Trophy? Why, you know, like, it's almost like if you have a good team, you're out because you're just supposed to have a good year with a good team, as if like success in the NHL materializes out of the clear blue sky. And as if we don't see really good teams every single year struggle and miss the playoffs.
Yeah. I will say this. And for Chris Knobloch, I thought he made significant changes. He put Mark Stewart right away in charge of the penalty kill. They brought in Paul Coffey, who had a vastly different approach on defense, right? Talking to the players, really emphasizing make plays, challenging them. Knobloch and how he ran his bench, right? He lowered the minutes of McDavid and Draisaitl. He took him off the power play. He really kind of made a 12-man unit. He had penalty kill, not the power play. He had three penalty kill units, and then the six forwards who didn't penalty kill, they would go out the first two shifts right after. Like small little, but I think that made a big difference in including everybody more on that team. I think 97 and 29, you know, a minute less. I've never been a big fan of having those guys on the penalty kill, to be honest. I don't really see the need, especially when you play almost 2 minutes on the power play, as they should. So I actually thought he made some significant changes they hadn't been made prior, so why would they suddenly have been made?
My point was he deserved consideration to be a finalist.
Oh, and Carberry's the one guy, funny enough. If we look at he took a team that wasn't supposed to be good. He's the poster boy for that.
Yeah,
100%. Tons of injuries, right?
Oddly enough, and I know that sometimes this comes down to a popularity contest, but the Jets had a great year. There's no denying that. But Rick Bowness wasn't on the bench for almost a quarter of the season.
Yeah, but I think that's why
personal and professional, you know, issues.
I think that's why I got some of the votes, right? Because he was dealing with some health stuff.
Okay, but like I get it. But if your team has the same success when you're there or not, like, isn't that a sign?
Well, but does the head like?
I'm not slagging him. I'm not detracting from his team season. I'm just saying, if this truly is a Coach of the Year award, that's a big chunk of the season to miss.
Yeah, I always wonder how much, like, on days between games, coach preparation is he still, you know, helping them all? You have the guy run the bench at the end of the day, which matters during the game, right? So maybe some line matchups here and there, but. I until we knew for sure, I'd always be curious. It's like when a coach is suspended, Frank. Oh, this guy's suspended for 2 games. I'm like, are you telling me he's not on the cell phone with his coaches or on FaceTime? Exactly. Right. So I think the coach is probably still involved, I would think. Unless he was that sick and he just couldn't do it. So we'll see. But yeah, that one's, you know what, the Selke, you know, good for those guys who get nominated. I'm sure, and we'll get to Toronto in a second, but I'm sure it probably came out at a time where the last thing the Leafs wanted was to see Auston Matthews get a nominated for an award when they lost again.
Well, how about Connor Hellebuck with the Vezina? Like, there's going to be some awkward potential acceptances. So, Bruins, Panthers, who you got and why?
I actually have the Panthers in five. I know five always thinks that, oh, you know, team's going to dominate them. Like, they can be close games, but I just like the Florida team top to bottom better. I think Barkov against Charlie Coyle is a real big mismatch for the Florida Panthers. Bobrovsky's playing very well. Their defense is healthy. Their team is deep. You know, they got some rest now. Bennett's probably going to be playing. I like Florida's team. I hadn't picked at the start of the playoffs to beat Boston. I actually had Toronto winning in seven. So I had Florida going to the conference final, so I'll stick with it.
I hate agreeing with you. I have also have Panthers in five. I just think there's a significant mismatch. And to hear Matthew Tkachuk say what he said after, which is more or less hinting that they think that their playoffs start now because it feels like their playoffs are just starting now because they had such a rest. That's a scary thought. Aside from Sam Bennett, they're almost completely healthy. If you've listened to the pod, you know, I'm not really a huge believer in the Bruins, and nothing really that they did outside of Swayman's performance in round one, I found to be incredibly impressive. In fact, they almost choked it away. Maybe the most impressive part of the entire series for them was the fact that they scored a minute and 20 some seconds after Toronto opened the scoring in game seven. And that was kind of it. They play hard. They compete, but I think Florida even takes that to another level. And I think Florida's deeper. I think they're faster. I think they're bigger. They're more skilled. There's just not really one facet of the game that I would give the Bruins a clear check mark in. You might say with the way Swayman's playing, it's goaltending, but I don't really have anything to pick at with Sergei Bobrovsky. So it's maybe a check, but it's not, it's a half a check, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. It's like Bobrovsky's really good, man. You look at his, I know people were like, hey, Bobrovsky in the regular season and, you know, his backup had better numbers. Yeah. His backup played 22 games compared to 58. So, you know, or 24, I should say, but, you know, and then he's continuing the playoffs. I think Bobrovsky showed last year he can come up with key saves, as he did that one save, probably the save of the playoffs thus far in round one against
Tampa Bay. That was so ridiculous.
Swayman's been very good. Don't get me wrong for Boston. And, according to the Leafs coach, the Leafs beat themselves again. So, I don't think Florida is going to do that. So I like the Panthers. I just think they're deep. They're heavier. It'll be I thought when Toronto played a little bit grittier, it really kind of gave Boston some trouble. But I think Florida's top to bottom is more skilled, and their top guys historically have produced more come playoff time. And that's going to be the difference.
I like everything about this Panther team. I really do. There's just not much to not like when it comes to the Bruins. As good as Swayman was, knowing that you were supposed to come into this in a rotation, quick turnaround, game seven to game one. Game one goes Monday night, 48 hours later with travel. Are you going Swayman or are you going Ullmark?
It's a great question. It's hard to wrap your head around going again away from Swayman, the guy. Now, I didn't see who the three stars of the game were in game seven, but up until game six, he'd been a three-star first, second, third in every game. So that he played. Like, it's hard. It's hard to go.
You actually look for the three stars?
No, I just saw that somebody posted online. I didn't look. I just remember certain things that piqued my interest, but no, I don't. I think three stars is the biggest joke now ever. But if I look at him, he was worth it. When you're getting stars on the road, that's when you know you're playing pretty well. I look at it, would be hard. I know Swayman says he wants to do it. Lots of other goalies are doing it. So I can argue that, yeah, he should be able to do it. In theory, he's more rested. But, you know, does he know how to, you know, the rest and recovery during? I'd probably still start him in game one, though. But I could actually see the argument of them saying, geez, we think we're tired, blah, blah, blah. But last year, Florida, Remember, they played seven games. Toronto was rested, and then they went in and won games one and two in Toronto. So I've looked back at the teams, how they fare in game one after a seven-game series, and the teams has rest. And it, honestly, Frank, it's all over the map. There's no, oh, yeah, the team with more rest automatically wins. It's not close to that at all, actually.
I'm with you. I'd probably go Swayman in game one, see if you can pick up the win, and then go Ullmark game two. Because I think at some point you might have to go back to Ullmark, and you don't want it to be a three-week gap between games.
No,
that's
probably
just my
not.
Thought process.
Yeah, like the challenge, I think here, it's as crazy as it sounds, I think this is harder on Ullmark. He's not used to going this long. Like, you talk to backup goalies, the biggest skill set a backup goalie has is the ability to stay ready when you only play maybe one game every 10 days. Right? Like that, it's a lot easier to get into rhythm and play. Everybody will tell you that.
This
and
is so, the reigning Vezina Trophy winner.
I know, but this is, it's something.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying it's not like you're turning to, oh my God, we can't move off of Swayman because we've got, you know, we got to get this other guy some schlub, some game time. It's like, no, this is a really good goalie who was neck and neck with Swayman all year.
Yeah. Well, I think it's obvious who they're trading in the summer too.
I reported in March what they tried to do at the deadline. So we know the writing's on the wall. We know who the guy is, which is why it makes sense to run with Swayman. Get it. But that wasn't your plan heading. You basically said, we're going to rotate.
Yeah.
Rotation is not one guy plays six and the other plays one in a seven-game series. That's not how it works.
No, it isn't. Hey, before we do the West, let's bring in Ty Yaremchuk. On a lovely Monday morning.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Were you making a coffee today, Tyler?
No, but I did go run and change the laundry about 2 minutes ago. I didn't think you guys were going to get to me this fast. So I slipped that in real good. Timing was nice.
Look at you getting stuff done around the house.
I am ready to go fill in the blank, gentlemen. And today it is brought to you by Wendy's. It takes hard work and determination to bring home the cup. Luckily, all you need to do to bring home some delicious food is, well, download the Wendy's Rewards app and you could be eating for free. With the Wendy's app, just place your favorite order and they'll be there on the road to victory. And by victory, they mean free food. Download the Wendy's app today. Fill in the blank. I got a couple here for round two for you guys. The series that's most likely to end in a sweep, the one that could get out of hand the fastest, is blank, Frank.
My gut says none.
Yeah,
that there are none that have a chance. But if there's going to be one, I would say it's Oilers Canucks.
Okay,
I guess the answer, I didn't pick anybody to sweep. So, but I will. I don't want to agree. So I'm going to say Florida Boston.
I picked both those series in five games. So, okay, so maybe it's not all that shocking that it would be four.
Yeah,
I just don't see the Bruins going out without a fight. And same thing with the Canucks. I watched too many of their games in the first round where they had furious comebacks. I just that team is not going to roll over.
No.
Flip side, series, that's the biggest lock to go seven, I guess, for you guys. You'll be picking between Dallas, Colorado, or Rangers, Canes. Greg's, which one of those two is most likely to go seven?
I have Dallas, Colorado. I think that's going to be a hell of a battle. I'm very much looking forward to that series. You know, Dallas, after a slow start to the playoffs, they came back and won four or five. But, you know, Colorado is a much quicker team than Vegas is. You know, we obviously saw that they found something they could exploit on Hellebuck, and that was traffic in front and make them not see it. And, you know, they have 10 deflections in that one. So I just Dallas has a lot of depth. I saw them getting better as the playoffs went along. I really thought they were the better team. I know that series won seven games, but I thought they were the better team for the majority of that time. And I'm looking forward to this one a lot. I think it's going to be a hell of a series.
Does the Western Conference champion come out of that series?
I'll say no.
I would say it depends
how much they beat each other up.
Yeah. Like, again, you guys just kind of said, you know, Edmonton could maybe make it a quicker series against Vancouver. I know our friends at Bet365, they're big, big favorites in that one. Like, if they were to breeze through, and I'm not saying that's likely or a lock, but if that were to happen in Vegas and Colorado, or Vegas, sorry, Colorado and Dallas beat the shit out of each other for 2 weeks, like, I think it might be a more interesting conference final. You guys haven't talked any Toronto Maple Leafs yet. So this one about the Leafs offseason, the position that the Leafs most need to make an add this summer is blank, Frank. It's kind of four areas you could go. Like, there's coaching, goaltending, defense. Do they need to add a better forwards?
That's the scariest part about this Leaf loss, is that this totally undermanned defense core that I think everyone would agree is not Stanley Cup caliber was not the reason that they lost the series to the Boston Bruins. And say whatever you want about their goaltending, Ilya Samsonov was totally fine in game seven. No issues at all. For a guy that found out at lunchtime he was starting game seven, that was a pretty good effort. So the area that they most need to improve, was that the question, or most need to change?
Most need to make an addition or a change.
Man, it's their core. And I'm going to say it's the four guys that have chewed up the most money on their salary cap, because I think it impacts every part of their build. It impacts their forward depth. It impacts their back end and what they can bring in, and it also impacts their goaltending situation and what they can pay a backup goalie now to play with Joe Wall or play in tandem with Joe Wall next season. So I'm gonna say the core.
For me, I'm gonna say then they need to change their top six, because they need somebody who's more productive at crunch time. And actually, you know, I want to be specific. They need somebody who can who is a consistent power play catalyst or specialist, because with that skill, their power play should not be that anemic. I'm sorry. It just shouldn't be.
Yeah, I think that is, it's fair. And it is interesting with everything you usually think of with that Leafs team to say they need to change up the forward thing or add to the forward group. It's a little surprising, but should be an interesting summer in Toronto nonetheless. That is a wrap on this week's edition of Fill in the Blank, brought to you by Wendy's and the Wendy's app. What are you waiting for? Download the Wendy's app today and start earning rewards points on every order.
Now let's get to the Western Conference in the second round, which of course will start Tuesday in Dallas, the Avs and the Stars. Frank, who do you like?
I got the Stars in seven. I just think they're a force to be reckoned with. And it sounds funny to say that, because I think everyone watched the way in which the Avalanche dismantled the Jets in round one. And it's funny that I use the word force, because that's what the Avs were. They were a force of nature. They were dominant in every single category. And it was totally impressive. But I feel like, for whatever reason, it's probably style points only, the Avs get so much. I'm not saying they don't deserve credit or hype. They do. It's just like the way they play, that hype train gets taken to another level on social media. And I think everyone's kind of looking at this series like, oh, the Avs are just so much better than everyone else. And I don't think that's the case. I think Dallas is an incredibly smart team. I think they've got all sorts of different ways that they can play. They may not be as fast, but I think they make better decisions and are more efficient with the puck. And if all of those things, like let's say this is a nail biter series and these two teams are so incredibly close to call, if all of that is true, I want the guy on my bench that is now a perfect 8-0 in game sevens, Pete DeBoer. I got Stars in seven. They were my cup winner. I'm not going against what I set up originally just because I had the Jets winning round one.
Yeah. Hey, I look at the Stars and I think this is going to be a heck of a series. I could easily say a coin flip. And if you pick the other team, I'd be like, yeah, okay. That makes a lot of sense. Obviously the Avs have the top end guys in McKinnon and Rantanen and Makar. There's no question about that. The depth of Dallas, I think, is deeper across the board. You know, they got some young guys who have really stepped up. And, you know, Wyatt Johnson just continues to get better. Like, who has a sophomore on the ice protecting a one-goal lead? The Dallas Stars. And he looks very comfortable doing it all the time. So,
I was getting Bergeron vibes last
round.
He's more talented offensively.
Yeah, that's fair. I look at Dallas and I think overall, I like Dallas's 1-6 defense better. And I think that might be a difference as the series goes along. Now, obviously injuries can play. That's the one wild card here. If any team in this series has a key injury, I think that could be, cause I have it in seven as well. And I think that could be the difference. I picked the Stars cause I had them going to the conference final to start. So I will stick with the Stars and what I think is going to be an absolutely hell of a series. I think it's going to be highly entertaining. I think it's going to have some grit. You've got key guys on both teams that can play physical if need be, and I like that. So I think this series is going to be quietly nasty. So
I think it's going to be in your face, punch you in the face, nasty.
Yeah, but you don't think of those two teams as that, and I think they're both going to play that way. So that's why.
So Chris Tanev, you mentioned 1-6 is better. He played 20, he averaged 23 minutes and 21 seconds a game. 163 minutes total time on ice. And his team outscored the opposition 5-0 when he was on the ice.
Not bad.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Well, what about Miro Heiskanen, man? The guy played almost 27 and a half minutes a night.
I know why he doesn't receive more Norris love. It's because he doesn't put up the points nearly as much as others. But if you're looking most complete defenseman, he's up there. Not to say that Quinn Hughes or Cale Makar, they lack defensively. It's just that I would say Heiskanen's a better defender than both of them.
Yeah, and I should mention, it's really the top five because Dallas... And this might be the one thing, Frank, as we watch in the series, Nils Lundqvist barely played. He played like less than 5 minutes a game for Dallas, and they only dressed six defensemen. So you do wonder, maybe, does fatigue become a factor against the speedy Avs if you're playing guys that many minutes? That's the one thing I'm going to watch to see is how they run their bench and their minutes on their back end for Dallas in this upcoming series. Because that, to me, is an interesting one. They obviously miss Hakanpää, right? He didn't play. I haven't seen an update, Frank, on him. But if he comes back, that makes a big difference for them because it spreads out their minutes more. Like right now, they're basically playing five defensemen with Hakanpää out.
So if that's the case, would you like to revise your statement that you think they've got the better 1-6?
No, I still think they do because even if I look at their top five, like
you're looking like Jack Johnson or Caleb Jones or whoever they're putting
in. Yeah, I don't think that really matters. But it's more like, honestly, Thomas Harley and Heiskanen are like, Thomas Harley doesn't get talked about enough either. He is a hell of a defenseman. And honestly, I think as a pair, if you look at defensively, for sure, I'm taking them as a pair ahead of Toews and Makar. For sure, not even close to me defensively. Makar obviously has the offensive side for sure, but overall defensively and skating ability between the four of them, I like Heiskanen and Harley better.
Fair. Injury update wise, Jonathan Drouin is, I think, possible for the middle of the series and beyond after missing the entire first round. Definitely not to start. And we've all been paying attention to Gabriel Landeskog and his ramp up of skating. There's growing whispers, though, that Landeskog is not coming back this season.
No, which makes sense.
Does it? I mean, 1 year from now, 1 year back, May 10th is the date, and they said 12 to 16 months. And Chris McFarland, their GM, said on a podcast with me on the record that the later the Avs play, the more of a possibility he is, which I'm sure is factually true.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people were wondering the way he started ramping up in February. Is this a guy that was possible for round one? Obviously, that wasn't the case. It seems like round two is a real long shot, and we'll see beyond that.
Yeah, like I honestly, I didn't really put him in consideration for playing for the Avs. If he does, it's a great surprise. But even if he does, man, you haven't played in 2 years, and to come back in round three of the NHL playoffs, like, my goodness, that's, you know, what would be the expectations at all? You know, it's the hardest time to come back. Like, it's just so much more physically taxing on your body, right? Mm-hmm. Like every play, like every shift, you're getting knocked around way more than you would in a regular season game. So I can understand if ultimately he pushes it, like, and who knows, he might never play again. I really hope that's not the case.
I'd be surprised if he doesn't.
An injury, end someone's,
you don't
career.
Work this hard. You don't rehab. If your plan isn't to come back, you don't.
No, but he can rehab everything, Frank. And then maybe once he gets there, he realizes, you know what? I can't do it. Like, maybe. The players know how hard it is. I think sometimes we underestimate how hard it is to play in the NHL and then stay in the NHL. And he would know, right? Like, he would know his body better than anyone else. And so I'm with you. I hope he can play. But I think if you are going to play, I think coming back, having a preseason game, you know, ramping it up, because everybody knows, like, the preseason intensity compared to regular season to middle of the season to the playoffs, like, you're coming back at like 150 speed. And I think that'd be asking a lot after 2 years.
Oilers, Knucks, the all Canadian matchup. Only is it the fourth time these teams have met?
Third time they've met. They met in 86 when it was best of five, the last year of best of fives in the first round. The Oilers swept them. And then in 1992, they also met. Edmonton won in six. They haven't met in 32 years. I think it's going to be great for the rivalry. Sadly, the idiocy of social media between, like, you'll see the idiots on both fan bases.
I'm here for it. I'm excited for it. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I guess. It all depends what
you see.
They're
two of the most passionate social media fan bases. So I love the
passion and stupidity. Like, when you got to go with racial comments,
that's stupidity. That's unacceptable at any point. Yeah.
I don't know. I've seen some of the videos already on both sides that have come out, and I'm just like, hey, for those releasing the videos, maybe try to up the intelligence factor just a tad. I'm just saying, right? Like, stupidity doesn't cover up and say, well, I'm passionate. No, you're stupidly passionate. It's not a great thing, but I will take the orders in five. I think their top end skill is way better. They present a very different challenge than what Vancouver saw in Nashville. I'm hearing the Canucks are pretty banged up, so that's not going to help them anyway. And no Demko, I say no chance.
No Demko to start. I think he's a distinct possibility for later in the series. He's also been skating. Does this mean we agreed on all four series?
Yeah.
That's scary.
You're getting smarter is basically what it tells me.
Either that or you're getting smarter. So I've got the Oilers also in five. I just think there's a big disparity between these two teams, the way they're built and how they play. I don't think most people properly grasped or realized that in round one, that as difficult of a series as that was to watch and grind through, and the sort of lack of offense and chances, most people didn't pick up on the fact that that's the Canucks trying to play that way. They were saying, oh, this is the Nashville Predators mucking it up. No, that's not what was happening. It was the Canucks trying to slow it down and grind it out. And maybe that's their recipe for success. Maybe they're taking a little bit of a Kings-ish. It's not the same structure or anything like that, but Kings type of approach where you say, hey, we don't think that our top guns can match your top guns, and this is the way we have to play to be successful. But the things that we saw differently from Vancouver, they played more of their big guys on defense. Tyler Myers, Nikita Zadorov, Ian Cole, Carson Soucy, healthy dose of them against the Nashville Predators, less of Quinn Hughes, less of Philip Ronick. And if I'm trying to chart a pathway for the Canucks to win this series, it's hard to do it without seeing a drop from Elias Pettersson. It's hard to do it without more balanced scoring. You can't win with a 1.5 line team in the playoffs, and that's what the Canucks were in the first round. They had a great game one from Dakota Joshua. He didn't really impact the series after that. Like, they had a good series from Pugh Suter. Like, important, interesting pieces, but there isn't enough depth there right now to think that this is a Canucks team that can topple this Edmonton team that really played so well in round one.
And then you throw in the other factor of how good Edmonton's special teams were. Like, their power play has been good for, many years, not just in the regular season, in the playoffs. I give Glenn Gallatson and Mark Stewart a lot of credit for game planning in the playoffs. It's so different. You focus on one team, you get to know what their tendencies are, and you hammer down on them. And Chris Knobloch, in I don't know what day it was talking about how, Mark Stewart, who he gave control of the penalty kill, he sat down in his presentation, said, okay, LA is going to try this, this, and this. So we're going to be ready for this, this, and this. And then Knobloch said, I'm watching on the bench. LA comes out on their first power play, and pretty much everything Stewart said, boom, 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 they tried it, and the Oilers had an answer for it, and then the Kings couldn't respond. And I do think when you can take away a player's tendencies, Frank, because let's be honest, like, it's hard to just snap your finger and change your tendency as an individual player, right? Like, if you just want to pressure guys, like, it's easy to pressure on the penalty kill. But if you're a team that's always set up and got used to it, and now it's like, geez, we got it, because they tried. I saw LA try to move the puck around a lot quicker, and they were able to, just guys weren't in position. They weren't used to it. And I'm curious about the special teams battle. Vancouver's power play hasn't been good down the stretch. And I know, Paul, you outlined at the start of the pod about how the teams with the best special teams won. Well, Vancouver power play was only 15%. It's because Nashville's penalty kill was 9 that they were able to beat them. And no offense, you're not holding Edmonton's power play to 9%. Like, Nashville's power play compared to Edmonton's power play, we're talking worlds apart. And ultimately, I think that's the difference. And the one big thing is, like, I'm curious about the head-to-head matchup in. So are they going to put Miller on McDavid? And if they are, who's taking on Leon Draisaitl? I think it wasn't Leon Draisaitl was the Oilers MVP in round one.
Yeah, and that's kind of my point, is they just don't have the depth to do it.
Yeah.
JT Miller, I think, was the Canucks' best player in round one.
Oh, 100% agree.
But the fact that they struggled that much with a Nashville team that for large stretches of the series outplayed them, it doesn't bode well for them. They came up clutch when it mattered. They have a ton of fight. They've got a lot of great qualities and pillar type pieces, but they don't have their best goalie. Their best defenseman had just an okay series, and who might be this season the best defenseman in the NHL. And their $11.5 million man was on a milk carton.
Yeah.
All those things have to change. And I just don't know that all of them are changing. Maybe two of them will change, or one of them, but I just don't think that's enough to beat Edmonton. I don't.
And hey, before we go, let's talk about change. We said we would talk about the two final series of the first round, which saw, of course, Vegas lose in 7, Toronto lose in 7. Sheldon Keefe came out and was like, teams figure out how, and then the Leafs beat themselves. And that's what we did in games 3 and 4. And I don't disagree with that, because ultimately the players do play. But I look and say, okay, you mean the coach, and coaching can matter in the playoffs sometimes way more than the regular season. You really drill down into matchups. And I'm like, so either the players didn't listen to what you wanted every year, or you've never been able to come up with something that leads to a successful victory in a series. It can't just be the players every time. And I don't know, Frank, that comment to me, I always thought he was coaching with a lot of pressure anyway. I think he knew that if we don't win, he's leaving. But it was another end to an odd season of quotes by Keith.
I think he embodied something that permeates the entire organization.
Woe is me?
No, it's a loser's mentality, and it starts from the very, very top in the organization, which is, oh man, what's the media going to say or going to think? How's our market going to react? What's going to happen with this? There's so much pressure here. There's so many eyeballs. Oh my God, what are we going to do? That's actually how they think and operate. And there's also a healthy dose of arrogance that's mixed into that as well. Arrogance based on what? I'm not entirely certain, because you've accomplished exactly nothing. And the loser's mentality, I call it that because when you worry about pressure and what other people think, I'm sorry, I've never heard the New York Yankees say that.
Yeah,
I just haven't. And they play in a way bigger market with way more eyeballs, with way more expectations every single year to win a championship. They just do. And I never hear them be like, oh my God, do you know what it's like to play in New York? Which is all we ever hear is, do you know what it's like to play in Toronto? And we talked about briefly how the scariest part is that this undermanned defense corps was not their issue. And it's terrifying if you're the Leafs and where to go. I just think they need wholesale changes. I think everything should be on the table. I think president, I think head coach, I think core members, all of it should be up for debate, because to hear, you know, William Nylander say after the game, we were so bleeping close. I'm like, close to what? We just both picked this Panthers team to dismantle the Bruins. You were close to what? Being 25% of the way there? Last year, they got to 5 total wins out of 16. This year, it's 3. You're not an authentic threat. You're not an authentic chance to win the Stanley Cup. And until you can take a step back and reinvent yourself in a way that says, we are one, we are in that conversation, I think the rest of it, you're just kidding yourself.
Yeah. It's truly mean they'll have an interesting offseason in Toronto. And I think, Frank, honestly, they have to make a decision on their coach. To me, if you don't think your coach is coming back, and I don't think this is something that just popped up, I don't see any benefit in having exit meetings with the guy who's not going to be your coach.
Well, I think MLSE is already well down the track of evaluating this. I think they had meetings last week.
Yes.
Way above the coaching staff to begin dissecting down 3-1 in a series. How did we get in this spot again? And it wouldn't have mattered or changed one thing to me had they won game 7. I would be at, just for pure clarity and transparency, I would be saying the same exact things today that I would had they won game 7.
Yeah. Yeah. No chance. No, I would agree wholeheartedly. I think there's significant changes. Now, what about Vegas? There might be significant changes there.
Marchessault, yeah, it's hard to do the math and break out your calculator and understand a path back for him. Couldn't help but notice the comments on social media once Mark Stone looked like he was hurt again in game 7, that people were already declaring him out for the start of next season. Jokes aside, I've said before, the league has to begin to figure this out. And short of that, Vegas is a really good team that wouldn't be surprised at all to see them change a couple small tweaks here or there and be right back in cup contender mode next season.
Interesting. So yeah, I'm curious to see what moves they make. Frankie, good luck today. And I don't know if good luck's the word to use or not, but good luck with that. And we will we'll have some games in all the series to discuss on Wednesday. Some series will be in 2 games. Some will have 1. It should be fun. That's another pod brought to you by Bet365, the largest betting platform globally. Open an account with Bet365 and use the promo code DAILY365 to bet on a huge range of markets. So whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. On behalf of Frank Saravalli, I'm Jason Gregor. Have yourself a wonderful day. We will chat with you later this week.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
All right, hockey fans, listen up because we've got something special coming your way this playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and let me tell you, it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of those questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. That sounds simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total amount of goals in the game will be over or under a certain amount, and that's where the real strategy starts to kick in. Next up, you're picking who's going to find the back of the net first, and you're going to want to be careful because that's one that could be cooked early on in the game. And finally, you got to predict which period is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That's up to you to decide. Now let's talk about prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? For the daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards to treat yourself to some fresh Nation gear, and you might even win a jersey from your favorite team. And for the big dogs, those who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.